So I'm talking to Catherine. What can I tell you about Catherine? Well, I'll tell you everything I know. Catherine likes cats. She has a husband named Luke. She doesn't currently own any Bitcoin, and she's head of marketing at Kernel Wealth. Today, you'll hear me babble on for the rest of the show, so I'll keep this intro really brief. But Catherine, like so many who work in the finance space, are gradually approaching a fork in the road type decision. Do I genuinely accept that Bitcoin could be a valid investment or not? Now, if you're an investor who's never really considered this part of it before, I think this is actually quite interesting. Most in my space have zero financial incentive to see Bitcoin succeed. It's one of these things that no matter what your view is on today, the way it's all playing out is that we're all likely going to be forced into either accepting it or declining it. And whatever our view is, will amplify over time. Is Bitcoin really the lifeline investors need, though? How is this all going to affect my revenue model? Inevitably, I suspect what will play out in the finance industry is that there's going to be a war of sorts being played out, which will give PR agencies and regulators something to feast on for probably quite a while. Meanwhile, a new digital asset, which everyday investors can all access democratically, it gets obscured. Perhaps they, whoever they are keeping us safe, though. Perhaps, though, maybe they're genuinely ignorant, and that will change over time. Or perhaps there are indeed other agendas at play. Now, like everything you believe in, naturally, you'll want to convince everyone that you've just discovered something amazing. So that's kind of what this is. I do hope, though, that following this chat with Catherine, that she sees the use case for Bitcoin and she jumps straight in there. I believed for quite a while that EVs were the future, right? I have nothing to gain personally if everyone adopts electric vehicles or not. But I think it's the future still. Now, it's the same thing with Bitcoin. I just think it's better, pure and simple, and that's why I want people to know about it. Now, if you saw something better, you'd want others to try it as well, right? Plus, here's what makes me really passionate about helping all the Catherines out there. Every single time there's a new user added onto the Bitcoin network, God creates a kitten. And this is why I do what I do. Before I get emotional, I hope you enjoyed this one today. Let's make a start. Welcome to the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast. In this podcast, I cover a wide range of topics ranging from passive investing, property investment, and even crypto, all designed to help everyday Kiwis build new wealth in the new world that we're heading into. I'm Darcy Ungaro, your host and financial advisor. Hopefully, the content presented here gets you thinking about tools available to build wealth and the ways that you can use them effectively. Please keep in mind that none of this is financial advice. Investments or strategies discussed may not be suitable for everyone, so be sure to do your own research before acting on anything discussed today. Further information on today's show can be found by tapping or swiping over the cover art in your podcast player. Here you're going to find some show notes, which will contain all relevant links relating to today's topic. The NZ Everyday Investor Podcast is hosted on the podcast.nz network and is brought to you in partnership with Hatch, who lets you put your money to work in the U.S. share market. Hope you enjoy the show.
I've done, you'll be happy to know, quite a bit of prep for this. So I listened to quite a few podcasts, and I don't know if you've come across it, but Luke got me onto this actually. Mila Kunis and Ashton Kutcher are really into crypto to the levels of there's an interview that they've done on Dax Shepard's Armchair Expert.
Yeah.
They're both, it's really interesting actually, because Mila was saying that Ashton had been into, you know, Bitcoin for 10 plus years, basically. And she was a really big non-believer. And so then she kind of talks about her learning journey and the things that she's done to really transition into understanding what it is. And now in the last couple of months has gone to the part of like is now producing NFTs.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, where the future of where they think they want to go. So I was like, good little insight. But
there's a lot more mainstream people starting to talk about it, which is really good because I don't feel so crazy bringing it up nowadays.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting because Luke's point was he's like, you know, I obviously every now and again talk about crypto, and he's like, you talk to me about it, not really interested, but I go and hear someone that I know in mainstream media talking about it, and yeah, all of a sudden I'm like, actually, maybe I should look into this. So yeah, that was quite funny. But yes, cool. So we might dive in. Thank you for joining me on the show today, Darcy. I mean, for those listeners, they probably know that, you know, Christine and I are definitely not crypto experts. And in fact, it's an area that we don't really know that much about at all. So we have invited you on today. You are a financial advisor and host of the NZ Everyday Investor podcast, and also a personal crypto investor. So something that you've been doing for yourself for quite a while, to basically chat to us about all the things crypto and where to start if you're even looking at cryptocurrency. So to kind of kick us off, do you want to maybe just chat us through, well, when did you first become interested in cryptocurrency, and how long has this learning journey been for you so far?
Yeah, so my journey has been quite a while, Catherine. It's taken me a long time to get. I was aware of Bitcoin for quite a while, probably since 2012. I was aware of Bitcoin in particular, but it wasn't until 2017 that I actually made the first move and bought some Bitcoin. And that was off the back of doing a podcast episode where I had to actually put my biases aside and actually just learn about what it was for what it is, rather than the way that I was viewing it. And I think I was traditionally viewing it as probably many people do initially, which is it's a fad, it's a scam, it's a get rich quick scheme. And if you don't know enough about finance and mathematics and you combine it together, it's extra dangerous. Just stay away. That's kind of what I thought. And then as I did some research, it was like, okay, I kind of understand that now. And I was slowly starting to dismantle all of the reasons why I shouldn't do it. Yeah. And started to replace it with maybe I should do it, or maybe I should do it even just a little bit. And so then I just got into it. I started just buying a little bit every single week. I think I did that for about 3 years. So for about 3 years since 2017, put aside the same amount every single week. And I basically built a portfolio of some crypto assets that I felt comfortable with. And and that brings me to today, really.
Cool. So I think that's probably a good place to start in terms of that misconception, because I know doing a bit of prep for this interview, and one thing that I think really confused me and probably turns off other people is, you know, everyone refers, like, it's called cryptocurrency, but we're almost told to think of it as an investment. But currencies and investments are quite different things in my mind, right? In terms of like normal finance learnings and what I've been taught at university. And also, I guess the idea of investing in a currency seems really scary, because I've been told, you know, all of the things of like forex trading sounds very complicated, and like understanding currency movements and the interactions between currency is very complicated. So do you think that, like, how would you describe it? Do you see it as an investment or as a currency? And does that make a difference for you in terms of, you know, investing your money there?
I think it's a misnomer, right? It's a terrible, whoever in the marketing team came up with cryptocurrency should be fired, right?
Yeah.
Because crypto, it sounds, crypt. It's this dark, dark, dungy place. Stay away from it. Or cryptography, that sounds like something from the war, like spies use that. And currency, yeah, you're right. You don't necessarily invest in the New Zealand dollar, right? Like, that's just what we use. It's a medium of exchange. So it's a terrible way of describing it. And I think if those who are in this space were to come up with a better name for this class, it would be digital assets, I think, rather than cryptocurrencies, because that's kind of what it is. It's a digital asset. You could use some cryptocurrencies as purely a medium of exchange. And for all intents and purposes, it's actually a very efficient medium of exchange compared to traditional systems.
Yeah.
But really it's so much more than that. And it's almost evolving and teaching us what it really is. I guess it kind of forces you to be really, really honest with what you believe about investing. Because if anything that you believe about investing is just some sort of jargon that you picked up or some sort of 10 hot tips, you will quickly be inclined to throw that away, because it brings out the truth in you. Like, if you think that investing is about owning meme stocks, if you do that in this crypto space, you will get chewed up and spat out very quickly. So it forces you to actually think about what is it about investing that you believe in? Why are you doing it? And and how long are you going to be doing it for? Are you just playing around here with these tools? Or are you trying to build something with it? So I think, yes, it is digital money for the digital world, but it's also a new asset class, I think, that as we're starting to see it evolve, it's starting to take on characteristics that many in the industry didn't initially think that it would have.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I think that is definitely helpful because I think one thing that, you know, I would absolutely put myself in the category of people that were quite skeptical and, you know, this is an asset class that I know very little about. So how would I, why would I even think about investing in it? And then sort of reframing it, as a digital asset that is almost just another store of value like other assets can be, has made me, I guess, a little bit more like warm to the idea of trying to understand this in the same way that I'd understand more physical assets, because it's obviously very different to say buying a property. You know, if you were, well, talking to a complete beginner, how would you kind of explain like what it is that you're buying when you're investing in crypto?
I kind of swap it around a little bit. So the one that I might use is that you have to start with what you believe is real, right? Like if you zoom in on any object close enough, you'll discover that there's a lot of space in between these little molecules bouncing around, right? Like everything is basically a mirage, or it's like in the Matrix, right? It's just a visual representation of something that we can understand. Our brains get it. So when we're investing, there's a natural inclination, like we say with property, for example, to think that it's actually more real. Yet perhaps it is more real, but your ownership of that asset is still based on faith. It's still based on faith that the title system will be something that we can rely on. It's still faith on your ability to repay the mortgage if there is a mortgage on that. It's not technically yours, right? It's it exists, it's real, but what it does for you is based on other things being real. With cryptocurrencies, and I like to pick on Bitcoin because that's the easiest one, is that it is real in as much that you can actually understand the science, I guess, if you like, behind it. It is knowable. And it is finite. So it exists on what we call a blockchain, which, if you like, is just a whole bunch of databases, perhaps, that are all linked together and updated simultaneously. And effectively, one way of looking at it is that it's a piece of code, a finite piece of code that's hanging on the internet, which you can own chunks of. And that's one of the ways that I like to look at it, because it is finite. It's a closed loop. Yes, it exists on the internet, but it's there because of mathematics. So as long as I believe in what mathematics does, I can have faith in the Bitcoin network.
That's probably an important distinction to make, as well as, you know, Bitcoin and crypto kind of get tossed around a lot interchangeably, but obviously cryptocurrency is, I guess, the whole asset class, right? And then underlying that, there's Bitcoin, but there's also lots of different types of currencies. So a couple of questions on that. Are all of them finite? Like, is every cryptocurrency, is that kind of a thing of a, like, I don't know, a feature of a cryptocurrency, is that they're created as a finite thing? And kind of how many are there at the moment?
I know there'll be thousands and thousands of different cryptocurrencies, right? And Bitcoin is the granddaddy of them all. But some of them are finite and some of them aren't. So with Bitcoin, there's 21 million that can ever exist, but quite a few million have actually been lost permanently and they'll never exist. So the actual amount of Bitcoin that can ever exist is probably around 17 million, all things considered. Mm-hmm. It is finite. They cannot produce any more. Luckily, there's a lot of decimal places behind it, so we can all be a Bitcoin investor.
Yes.
Whereas with a lot of the other cryptocurrencies, it is not finite. They can produce more all the time. And so you're not buying scarcity. With Bitcoin, you are buying a piece of code that cannot be inflated past the maximum amount. So you are buying scarcity, just like you would when you're buying real estate, right? Because there's only so much land in existence in the world. Your belief is that people will be paying more for that scarce thing in the future than what you paid, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And same thing with Bitcoin, you're buying some scarcity, but that's in the digital realm. So yeah, like not all cryptocurrencies are the same. Some are centralized, some are decentralized. So that just means that some are effectively on a closed network where there is kind of like a ringmaster or a puppet master that can see things and play around with stuff. Other ones are decentralized, like Bitcoin, where there is no one person who is in charge. So it's like a democratic financial system, if you like. and yeah. how they work, how they come into existence, how the transactions are verified on the network. There's some differences as well. Proof of work, proof of stake. Some uses a lot of power. Some uses a lot of resource. A lot of the cryptocurrencies out there yes. will be what we call utility tokens, where you own them because of what that specific network can do. For example, on the Ethereum network, you could own Ethereum, you could own some ETH, hold that asset and speculate that someone will pay more for it in the future than what you paid, or you can use that to go on what's called decentralized finance, a whole bunch of stuff that I have a very limited understanding on.
That I think that is really helpful, because one of the podcasts that I was listening to just to kind of, that was really explaining like ETH and the differences between Ethereum and Bitcoin, is they're also saying like with Ethereum, you have the ability to then go and buy things like NFTs. Obviously more jargon there, which we may or may not get to later, but you know, you have the ability to use it almost as a means to access other things, as you've just kind of said, as opposed to Bitcoin is a little bit more exclusively as a possibly just a store of value that you're hoping will appreciate over time. Would that kind of be fair? And is that sort of what you're hoping with that as an investment? Is that the kind of end goal?
You're kind of staking a claim in the new world that hasn't yet manifested itself with Bitcoin. So putting aside the other ones just for a second and just looking at the Bitcoin piece, the use case is that you're putting some of your wealth, and we'll maybe touch on this in the future, how much do we put towards this, but you're putting a tiny little sliver of your wealth into an asset which is so other that you get this non-correlation to traditional assets. And so the use case is that as a portfolio enhancer. So if you're investing, say, primarily with index funds, some individual shares, maybe an investment property, if you had a small sliver of Bitcoin, you're getting like a flavor enhancer to your portfolio, because it's like saffron, just a tiny, tiny little amount, right? Of this new element that you introduce can give you significant outperformance. And even during poor times of performance within Bitcoin, where it drops down in value significantly, like 75%, which can happen again, I promise you it will, you still are better off even inserting just 1% of your overall portfolio to Bitcoin, because in those times that it does perform well, it performs so well that it's possible for everyday investors, I think, to get the edge and not just have to put up with the average. So it's as an enhancer to your portfolio. Yes, it is an alternative store of value. And depending on how much you want to go down the rabbit hole of the world that we would have to be in for Bitcoin to be worth millions of dollars, it all depends on who you are. Like, you can have just a little bit of it and buy into a little bit of that world. Or you can be a Bitcoin maximalist, sell everything and put it all into Bitcoin, and you'll either make it or break it. Who knows? One or the other, though.
Yeah, I think, you know, that is such a good point, because I think that one of the things that often can put people off about Bitcoin is, or just crypto in general, is it's, I don't know if this is like the nature of just it as in kind of a thing and almost the like world it's created, but you've got some real diehard fans, right? Like, it's, there's some really, really, you know, intensely like Bitcoin fanatic kind of investors out there, and they're very loud, and you can hear them, you know, in news headlines. And of course, media jumps onto like a lot of the good stories, but then also the negative stories. And I think that can put people off a little bit, because it's like, oh, hold on, they seem quite fanatic about this. I don't know if I fully understand it. Therefore, you know, why should I consider this as an alternate to, say, investing in shares? But what you're sort of saying is, well, actually, there's almost a minimal amount of information that you need to understand and kind of reframe this as a digital asset. And then there absolutely can be a place for it to make up a, you know, part of a well-diversified portfolio for most people, if that's what they're open to. Do you think, is that sort of fair?
Like, absolutely. You're in the industry as I am, in terms of you're in the financial services space. And so you understand that, you know, obviously most of the financial products that people acquire out there, there's an established revenue model behind it. And so whenever there's something new that comes along by default, we're of course going to be resistant and label it fringe and something that only conspiracy theorists do, or these nut bars over here. Yeah. That's what they do, right? But yep. I think as things start to transition and we start to see more ways that everyday investors can access exposure to Bitcoin that are kind of mainstream, and there's a revenue model that's built around distributing Bitcoin for these investors, I think you're going to start to see, funnily enough, the traditional mainstream financial advice start to adopt it. I think that's actually happening now, where more mainstream people start to talk about it. It becomes legitimized to some extent, and it's not this fringe thing that these people that are, you know, a bit strange deal with. It's actually legit, and it requires a different type of faith in financial markets, but it's still faith, right? Like when you're building wealth, which is diversified and constructed in the best possible way, but it's all denominated in US dollars, then really you're still quite concentrated, aren't you? Mm-hmm. Whereas if you can diversify a small chunk of your portfolio into something that is a denominator diversifier, then you are truly diversified another layer deep, because you're not just choosing between infrastructure, equities, and bonds. You're actually introducing something completely foreign to the mix. In the new world that we're heading into, people are starting to appreciate that, hey, share market is looking pretty elevated right now. It's not so much so that we want to stay out. We actually kind of want to get in as well. But at the same time, we want to do so and we want to be diversified. So when you're diversifying, including this new digital asset, I think it almost gives you license to operate still in traditional mainstream investments, because you do have an element which is hedged should that things don't work well. You've got something on the other end of that.
Yeah.
Please pardon the intrusion. Now, quick shout out to a partner of the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast and a platform that I use to access the U.S. share market, Hatch. Now, if you click on the show notes or you visit hatch.as/NZ Everyday Investor, and if you sign up for the first time, deposit $100, you're going to get a $20 credit free. That'll make your investing journey just a little bit easier. I've been using Hatch now for just over maybe 18 months, and they're awesome. Really easy to use. Check them out if investing in the U.S. is something that you'd like to make a start on. All right, let's get back to the show.
Okay, cool. And I guess, you know, if for anyone out there listening, like, they've heard a bit about this and they're doing their own research and really starting to understand a little bit, you know, that cryptocurrency is well more than just a fad. You know, how easy is it for like just the regular person on the street, the regular Kiwi, to actually go and buy Bitcoin? Are the barriers to entry high? Is it as easy as, you know, signing up to an online platform like you do for shares now in New Zealand and just chucking $100 in?
Yeah. Yes, it is, Catherine. Yes, it is.
Okay, good. That's good to know.
At the end of this,
that's where I need to start.
That's right. It is that easy. And I guess even going before that, though, I guess probably one of the questions as well is that, you know, how do you know if you're ready to invest in it? Because I think that's really important to think about this. Because if you're attracted to this space a little bit, well, let's put it this way. You're either going to be slightly attracted by this, or you're going to be turned off thinking it's still some sort of scam. But let's just say that you were ready to invest in this. Well, what I would suggest is that you actually want to have at least a model of a portfolio that you're trying to build. So that could be your core satellite. And I know you guys probably speak about the core satellite approach quite a bit. So that could be like that. And I would suggest that an allocation towards Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies is just one of those tiny little satellites. Let's just say that you put in 1%. Well, what do you do? What you should do is you should deal with providers that are in New Zealand, ideally, if you can. Mm-hmm. So Easy Crypto is the place where I go. It's like a shopping mall for cryptocurrencies. Yep. So you can sign up to Easy Crypto and you basically have to go through your standard ID stuff, upload your driver's license and your proof of address. Once you get set up, you can go in there and you can put your New Zealand dollars into it, choose what you want to buy, and then they will send it directly to the address that you want to send it to. So your address, your Bitcoin address, for example, it's kind of like an email address. So you buy the stuff and they basically send it to your address. You get a digital wallet that you could install on your phone. There's lots of different types of wallets, and keeping it really simple, the wallet that I personally use, or the main one that I use, is an Exodus wallet, Exodus. It's just an app that you can download on your Android or your iPhone, and you can hold a whole bunch of different assets on there. But each one of them will have a certain address. And that's what you copy and paste into the Easy Crypto thing when you buy it. It sends it to that address. Moments later or hours later, sometimes you'll see those assets appear and then you can actually watch them go up and down like a yo-yo. So this is where it's kind of like with online investing platforms. This is my, I guess, my gripe with online investing platforms, if I have one, is that it is so easy to access your investments, which is awesome, but it's also so easy to liquidate your assets because it's so easy to look at them all the time.
Yes.
Crypto, it's like next level. So, you know, you can look at this and within minutes, you can see things moving up by 1%. So I always say to people, you know, it's not so much the hands that try to get a hold of your Bitcoin. It's not so much about worrying about who's going to steal it from you and scammers. It's your own hands. It's how do you actually deal with holding an asset, which is incredibly volatile because it will do stuff to you. It will make you feel like you're on top of the world. This euphoria kicks in. You can't make a mistake. You might get tempted into trading it and speculating because you've seen how well it grows. But it's just another example of how you can get your face ripped off when you don't know what the hell you're doing. So hold is what I recommend. Exodus Wallet, great place to start. But when you get more, I would recommend using what's called a cold wallet or a hardware wallet, something like a Trezor or a Ledger. That's where you are starting to hold an amount of assets which you'd really feel uncomfortable about losing. I'm a big fan of diversification. So not only diversification in terms of what type of digital assets you own, but in how you store it.
Yeah. Awesome. And because I guess, you know, as you said at the start, when you first started, you obviously were doing an amount every week, which is exactly the same investment behavior that we talk about for investing in shares and dollar cost averaging. So it's like, you know, if you've already got that investment behavior down pat, you can pretty much just transfer that over to investing in the crypto part of your portfolio now, right?
You're kind of touching on something which I think is really interesting because it's kind of like, you know, when you're learning how to invest, you're learning a new language, right? You're learning a new operating system. You're learning the coding language that's used for it. But that's transferable big time as soon as you get into the digital asset space, partly because a lot of the people that are building in the blockchain or the cryptocurrency space, they're building because they've come from a traditional finance paradigm. And so that's why there's this huge crossover. But there's also, it's really interesting, there's a lot of new stuff that you will discover and learn as you get into it, because it teaches you stuff. It is something in and of itself. It's not just a creation of humans. It's something more than that. And it's because it's evolving and the use cases are starting to evolve as well, which I find super freaking fascinating. But simple things like, you know, diversification, what's your appetite for risk? What's your investing time frame? All these fundamentals, you need to carry it through. Don't throw it away. In fact, it's more true.
Yeah, I think, you're so right with that. And I was just thinking, one of the stats that I know, you have a really good video on YouTube, I believe, about kind of like a 101 of just really breaking down exactly what cryptocurrency is and what Bitcoin is. And I know one of the stats that you included in that was that the FSC New Zealand had from 2020 said that like 21% of New Zealanders currently hold or invest in cryptocurrency. And that was quite a surprise, I think, because well, I've personally found that number really high for, I guess, just general conversation and chatting with friends and that sort of thing. But, you know, I think it's probably testament to the fact that it is quite easy to get into at a low level, right? Like there's no minimum to kind of invest in. You could chuck $100 in and see how it goes and do a little bit of a test and learn, as you say, like really figure out how comfortable you are with extreme volatility and, you know,
totally
see what type of investor behavior you're good at and maybe not so good at before you start to really allocate a portion of your overall portfolio wealth towards this. Because, it's probably as much about like understanding yourself as it is the end investment.
You will learn so much. I've learned so much more by building my own crypto portfolio than I have my mainstream portfolio, just because it is so intense and it's reflective. If you say that you are a high risk investor because you have a long time frame and you can handle that, yet you can't handle it when you watch your portfolio of digital assets dive by 74%, you're wrong and you need to change, right? Like it will tell you when you're a liar. And that's really important when you look at, well, what settings should I be with my KiwiSaver? You know, because if I want to chase a higher return, I need to be comfortable with volatility. I know from my digital asset portfolio that I'm actually not that good at volatility. So maybe I should actually think about that. That's what I mean. So it's really quite important, but people shouldn't be approaching digital assets with the paradigm of buying a meme stock. This isn't a fad. This isn't something that's just going to be here and it's going to be gone tomorrow. It's quite possibly going to be here to stay, but it will come with significant volatility. And it will shake you out if you are not determined to stick to a game plan. So having a time horizon at least of 10 years, you know, so that means that whatever money you're putting into it, you need to say goodbye to it, not forever, but for 10 years. And the reason why I stress not forever is because I really don't like it when I hear people saying, you know, only invest an amount that you're willing to lose, because that's what you would do if you were going to a casino. But when we're investing, we're not gambling. We're investing and there has to be some reason behind it.
Yeah, so, I love that.
Yeah, but we do have to lock it in for a long time, I think, right? Like we do have to, and that's the problem with being so easy to access is that, like, again, the biggest hands that you need to worry about are your own hands when it comes to this.
Yeah, I think that is definitely very good advice.
Yeah.
And, you know, we always talk about like having, just generally speaking for finances, having an accountability buddy or some kind of like system or process in place to almost, you know, set yourself up for success. And it sounds like this is just absolutely the type of asset and investment that you need to have that for. So much more important. I know you touched a little bit on like some of the security stuff. I think that's probably worthwhile just regrouping on, because I think some people maybe, you know, cryptocurrency or Bitcoin, whatever it might be, has gotten negative press in the past about, you know, people, as you say, get worried about maybe having their money stolen or something happened to it, or they don't quite understand where it's stored. Do you have any kind of pointers around that, just for like, if I was going to sign up tomorrow and I'm using Exodus and, you know, say Easy Crypto, is there anything that I need to do to just make sure that I'm well protected?
When you go to work, right, you're going to work, you're putting in your hours, that means that you're not doing other things, right? So you're making a sacrifice to go to work, you pay tax on that money. Then when you've got the leftover money after tax, you're investing some of that, right? So this is money which, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, right? So we've got to make sure that you're not going to lose it from something that could have easily been avoided. Thinking in terms of what's happening in your own home first, simple things like going through the security steps that are requested. So let's stick with Exodus to start with. So you've got this wallet on your phone that you can access. Whenever I open up my Exodus wallet, it's doing a biometric scan, and I've got to put in some other details, and then I'm in there, right? It's got two-factor authentication. I'm in there. I can move money in and out. I only keep an amount on there that I'm comfortable with. As soon as it gets beyond a certain amount, I'll scrape some of it off the top, and I'll put it into my hardware wallets, and I'll come to the hardware wallets in a second, perhaps. But even with your Exodus wallet, you get what's called a backup phrase or a seed phrase, and I think it's about 12 really weird words all grouped together.
Yeah.
That backup phrase needs to be written down, and you need to write it down where there's no cameras. You have to be a bit paranoid, a bit cloak and daggerish about this one, but you've got to write down this passphrase. Do not take a digital picture of it. Don't store it in a spreadsheet. Don't store it anywhere online. It's got to be on a bit of paper. Carve it in stone if you want to. Put it somewhere secret, somewhere safe. So this is where, if you have a safe deposit box, that's great. But you want to make sure that it's available for your estate. So if you pass away, you want to make sure that members of your family can find it. And as soon as they find that backup phrase, they have access to your wallet. Easy.
Okay.
But that's why you have to guard it really, really carefully. Don't give it to your solicitor as part of your will. Maybe give a little trail of breadcrumbs, whatever it is, but you got to keep that backup phrase really safe. My phone went on the fritz earlier on this year and I had to get a new one. And I used my backup phrase to actually do it. And it was really cool. Super, super easy, right? But if anybody else saw that phrase, I've lost all my money.
Yeah.
So really important. So that's one thing around keeping yourself safe, is just do not store your backup phrase anywhere. Hackers are looking for backup phrases now, right? So if you have it on your Outlook, if you have it on your Hotmail account, your Gmail account, Google Drive, wherever it is, assume somebody will find it eventually, because they probably will. But then you want to get a Trezor or a Ledger, which is the hardware wallets that I'm talking about. So that just means it's a dumb USB stick. And all it is capable of doing is sending and receiving crypto assets. Once it's plugged into your computer, you now have access to what we call your private keys. So if you think about this in terms of your house, you have the keys to get in, but you also might have a letterbox. So people can send you mail. That's your address. But only you should have the keys. So your wallet is really just the custodian of your keys. As soon as it's disconnected from the internet, no one can access your keys. It's physically impossible because there's no bridge. That will come with a seed phrase, which you keep backed up and you keep that separate as well. So those are the two sort of custody things to think about. So those are the main things, really, just practicing good safety protocols around your wallets, having a diversified strategy if possible, where you have more than one wallet, and then avoiding leaving your funds on other exchanges.
Yes. Yeah. So I guess, so with, so my understanding is really clear. With the cold wallets, it is basically almost like you have a physical USB that you are then taking and putting somewhere very securely in your residence or somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So what I'm holding in my hand right now basically is the USB device, right? It's called a Trezor Model T. And I can plug this into my computer and to do my transactions with. I can move stuff in and out and all the rest of it. When I disconnect it, I can still send assets into that wallet, even though it's not connected to the address.
Right.
Because it's just holding the keys to that. It's not actually holding the assets themselves. Right. Once I disconnect this device and I stick it into a safe somewhere, ideally separate from where I normally live, then I know that there's an extra layer of security. Now, if something happens, there's a fire and that thing gets lost or stolen or destroyed, that's okay, because I've got my backup phrase stored somewhere completely separate. So there's multiple layers, but this is the art of it, right? Because we don't have to worry about this when we're investing in an index fund, because we've got custodian, we have fund managers, we've got all this stuff and regulation that's there to protect us. But if you're going to be your own bank, which you are when you hold crypto assets, you need to behave like a bank. And this is by far the biggest issue, I think. And this is the this is the problem that I hope will be solved soon in New Zealand. I'm really keen to see some sort of crypto fund in New Zealand, which is accessible to retail investors. And if anyone's listening and they want to reach out to me on this, please, I'm desperate to, because this is the problem, right? This is the problem.
Yeah.
Most people, this is where they fall down. They understand the use case, they get it, they want to do it, but where they fall down is where they don't have the confidence that they can practice safe custody of their assets. And that's where a fund manager can solve the problem so easily.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because I was even just thinking, you know, even just the little nuances of, you obviously need to tell your partner that you've gone and done this, like, don't go and do that. And then no family member know that this is what's happened in case they find some piece of paper and throw it out. Or,
you know,
if you kind of forget, like, you never know what might happen if you unfortunately get hit by a bus, you need to, like, other people need to be able to find this stuff, right? So it's not really something you want to be doing. And then, I mean, you obviously don't want to be telling everyone where all your details are, but you need to let those closest to you in on where, you know, that you've made this investment choice.
If you're not really good at talking to your partner about money, this makes you, right? Because you have to, because otherwise you're putting 10 grand in there and you're going to get hit by a bus tomorrow and you've just blown 10 grand and they're going to be pretty angry when they're trying to pay the funeral, right?
That's definitely, that's not how you want to go. No. Oh, cool.
But it's a fun, it's a fun thing. Like, I don't know where you sit in the spectrum, Catherine, yourself, but if I may ask you a question.
Yeah.
Do you currently own any crypto assets yourself?
Good question. I don't. This is something that Christine and I have talked about a lot because, like, personally, not so much on the show, because neither of us own any cryptocurrency. And we had sort of set a bit of a challenge to actually go and do that and invest. I think we picked an amount that was semi-meaningful for us and we were like, let's just start with $500. So, you know, enough to kind of test it out and actually see, you know, the volatility play out in a mildly, like, interesting way.
Yeah.
So yeah, we haven't actually gotten to the part of doing it. All I have gotten to is downloading Exodus. So when you were talking through that, I was like, I do know, I guess kind of some of the steps of what's required, but I think, you know, you're right in that the bigger challenge for me was maybe not so much getting my head around the idea and concept of it as a digital asset and a type of investment, because I think, you know, I'm pretty okay with risk and volatility. That's all cool. But more just around how does this sort of play out? What's the practical steps? What do I need to think about in terms of making sure that it's safe and I've done all the right things? And then also, like, as you sort of said earlier, like, what's really my strategy or what's the end game here? You know, I want to make sure we're investing in it for the right reasons and the right amount for, say, like, our kind of goals and overall portfolio, rather than just doing it for the sake of doing it or jumping on the train, right, so to speak, which I think is, like, for a lot of people is, you know, they get that, like, whole element of FOMO, but then also that's not a good way to start, in my view, because then you're just looking at it as, like, a, you know, quick way to make money.
It is a long-term investment. That's what this is, right? And I think you do kind of have to think about it, though, with your asset allocation hat on a little bit. And you do need to think about, well, which digital assets will I include in my portfolio? Because if you do go down and you try to choose the next great thing, it's kind of like just investing in startups, right? Except the startups far outweigh the number of the mainstream, right? So we've got Bitcoin, Ethereum, Cardano, Solano, Poly. There's a few kind of mainstream-ish assets, and you can look at them. I think on Coin Market Cap, you can look to see which ones have the largest market cap. Yeah. And what I personally believe in is a diversified portfolio within the small sliver of digital assets that I own. But the bulk of it is Bitcoin. And the reason why is because it is actually relatively boring. Hard to believe, right? Yeah. But it's relatively boring and safe, which both sound like incorrect words to use with cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
But the other ones are actually really important and engaging, but you really need to be careful with how much you allocate, and then you really need to rebalance. Like, I rebalance twice a year because things are so volatile. But I believe that if I kept on going with that strategy and I'm not selling and I'm not trading within 10 to 20 years, I will either be proven as crazy or early. One of those two.
Yeah.
Probably nothing else.
Oh, so good. So good. I think there's obviously so much more that we could talk on this, but this is a really good place to start, because I think, you know, at the very least, it gives people a good starting block of really reframing this as something that is an asset that's worthwhile looking at, you know, just like any other asset is when you're considering going and investing. There are merits, and you really need to assess what it is that you're working towards and how that might fit into your kind of goals and time frame, and then going through the fact that actually this is just as easy. And also, like, I think one of the things that probably I didn't really appreciate as much is, you know, now that I find out that I guess the barrier to start is so low, it's as easy as investing in shares, right? It's still very different to trying and getting over the hurdles of going and buying an investment property. Then, you know, this is actually something that might be more relevant to a lot of people, because you don't need all the money in the world to get started. And as you say, it might just be that little bit of extra in your portfolio that ultimately tips your performance in a certain direction.
Yeah, in a certain direction. That's the direction we don't know.
Yeah, okay, that's the caveat. It could be up, it could be down, but as long as you're in it for the long game, it will be fine.
But that's the thing with flavoring, right? You just need a tiny, tiny little bit, and it can have it can completely change the profile of the whole stew, right? And it's the same thing, right? It's such, in my mind anyway, it feels like such an asymmetric bet in a sense, because as long as my allocation towards it is relatively small, because it has the potential of significant outperformance.
Yes.
I don't need it to be huge, right? And I don't want the risk of having more than a very small amount in my portfolio allocated towards this, because it could go south. It could actually go to zero.
Yes. I know you've had a lot of conversations with various different experts as well about, you know, this whole area on your show, and you've obviously been on this learning journey for quite a few more years than us and the other listeners. So for those that want to start, I guess, educating themselves more in this area, are there particular resources that you would point people towards, either of your own or things that you found helpful?
Yeah, like start with the NZ Everyday Investor podcast for the episodes that I've done, because I am trying to always, every time I touch it, I'm trying to start with someone who doesn't know anything at all about it, and then slowly start to pick it up from there. Yep. But there's a lot of really good podcasts, not a lot that are New Zealand based, however, but there's a lot of good podcasts that I'd recommend. One is the Coin Bureau. the Coin mm-hmm. Bureau on YouTube. And another one that I can think of is actually, it is a New Zealand based one, is Brave New Coin. And mm-hmm. That's a podcast done by Andy Pickering. Really, really good. A little bit technical, but awesome. And then, you know, like there's the Pomp podcast, Anthony Pompliano. I can't remember how to say his name, but there's a lot of really good stuff based on overseas. But you'll really quickly discover that there are some extremists out there in this space. And if yep. you discover them, I would suggest just as a good form of safety, just to maybe be a bit careful, either be diversified, listen to a very wide range of views around crypto, or sure. choose the people who appear to be somewhat balanced. It can go extremely quickly, and that will trigger some people more than others. And so it's not an asset for everybody. I think most people, yes, but not everybody, because if they already have some tendencies to be a bit extreme with their views, I would suggest diversification in your content consumption in this space for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Great. Love that. Thank you so much for the discussion today. I definitely, need to get my butt into gear.
Set up. Yeah. Let me know what your wallet is. I'll send you a dollar right now.
Yeah.
It'll be worth $1 billion in no time. I promise.
Oh, wonderful. Yes. It's one of those things that I've been thinking and talking about for far too long. And now I actually just need to pull the trigger and get started with it. Otherwise I never will. So, one thing that we always say on here is like, it's been said on the podcast now, so we have to be held accountable. It's going to happen. I'll start. Go.
Okay, so thanks Catherine Emerson and Christine Jensen, who wasn't present in this recording, but she does exist, I am assured. Thank you for inviting me on your podcast to share about what I shared with on my podcast today. It's no secret. That's the podcast that you were effectively listening to today. So I'd encourage you to check them out. Now, there's so much more that I could say around this topic, as you could probably tell, but here's what I want to make something clear on. Don't mistake my enthusiasm here as instruction to go out there and buy some Bitcoin. It's not for everybody. It's for most people, I think, to some degree, but it's definitely not for everybody. Chances are, though, this isn't the first time that you've heard about Bitcoin, I know, but ideally, I would like to suggest that you should absorb as much as you can before you take the leap and then you jump in there. Get some advice, especially if you can. But whatever you do, just make sure that you have a strategy which allows for the fact that you have to kind of invest for at least 10 years. And if it all went to zero, you need to make sure that you'd still recover okay. Lastly, a reminder to check out YouTube for the NZ Everyday Investor as well. I've been doing a few 10-minute short videos covering a wide range of topics like repay your mortgage or invest. What is Bitcoin? Stuff like that. So make sure that you go over there, you check it out, you subscribe while you're there. And one more thing, if you're keen to get into this space of investing in Bitcoin or other digital assets, and you just want to know where to start, check out the notes for an affiliate link to Easy Crypto. This is where I go personally to purchase my digital assets. Check them out, research everything that you can about digital wallets, and then do what you feel is right, whether that's do nothing or something. Just do it. All right, that's it for me. Have an awesome week. Thanks for listening into the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast, a show that's about helping you, the everyday Kiwi, build wealth. To learn more about the show, please visit nzeverydayinvestor.com or visit your show notes on your podcast player. There, you can find out how to make contact, sign up to our newsletter, and check out previous episodes. We're on a mission to increase wealth for everyday Kiwis. If you'd like to support what we do, then there's a few things that you can do. Write a review on whatever platform you're listening to this on, share episodes with your friends, or support us financially on Patreon. Before we finish up, just another reminder that what was discussed today is for educational purposes only. Ideally, before acting on anything covered here, please contact your trusted financial advisor or do your own research. Hope you enjoyed today's episode, and we'll catch you next time around.